Hello, Forex fans. Welcome to the fourth episode of the Forex Gaming Podcast. I am Rob, aka Orcas of Dolphins for the subreddit. And tonight we're going to be talking about the Civilization series and all things Civ. Before we get started, I want to introduce our roundtable of panelists tonight. And as I introduce you, please tell me a little bit about what you've been playing. First up, Drexy, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, Rob. I've had a little bit of a play this week with Dominions 4, inspired by the multiplayer YouTuber series that's going on at the moment. So I've been trying to get my head around that.
That's awesome. What about you, Kirkus Maximus?
I've been way too deep into Stellaris. I'm way too into it, and it's a problem.
Maybe you should start a Stellaris Anonymous group then?
Yeah, so long as they're very human-looking. Otherwise, I might try to eat them. I'm really looking forward to the upcoming expansion as well.
Awesome. What about you, Sabalitz? Good to see you back.
Yeah, glad to be back. I've been playing a lot of Master of Orion, actually, the most recent Master of Orion, using the 5X Ultimate Balance mod. That mod actually completely turned that game around for me, so I've put in a decent amount of hours into it after finding that mod. And then on top of that, I've been playing a lot of Dominions 4 for that YouTube series, so that's been a lot of fun.
Nice. Did you see that they're actually going to deliver one more patch? I think it's like a balance and stability patch.
For Master of Orion, they're doing another patch?
Yes, sir.
Ah, that's good news. I actually honestly thought they were done with it.
As did I, and I think just about everyone else did too. So, yeah, really excited. I'm glad to see that they're actually going to do something at least. I don't know what they're going to finish it off with. But so, Gigio, welcome back.
Hey, goedemorgen. Sorry I'll be inflicting my accent on you guys again, but I'm happy to be back, yeah. I've been playing a lot of colonization recently on GOG, and it's still a lot of fun.
Yeah, no doubt. Tortuga, tell us a little about what you're doing, man.
Well, I would say I'm playing Dominions 4, but it's really, I spend probably 3 hours of time emailing diplomacy and then 1 hour of actual gameplay. But other than that, I've had my nose buried deep inside Aurora 4X. The game is very, very addictive.
So something I really wanted to do before we get started is something that I've wanted to do with this podcast, which is take a moment to look at one of the threads on the subreddit and maybe like answer the question or talk about the subject at hand briefly before we get started into our general topic. And this week, I really wanted to take a look at the thread titled, "Is Distant Worlds Any Good?" Can anyone answer that for me, please?
It's better than Sid Meier's Starship.
Okay, cool. We know your answer, Kirkus, and it's actually null and void, so don't even say anything. Sabalitz, do you like Distant Worlds?
It is my favorite Forex game ever.
Strat and Tortuga, did you guys like it?
No.
I mean, yeah, of course. I would say that it's one of my favorites. Maybe I'm learning Aurora 4X right now, so maybe that one's good. But yeah, it's just a fantastic game. If people say otherwise, I would speculate that they didn't give it a long enough shot. It does take a little bit of a learning curve to get into.
Yeah, Kirkus, learning curve.
60 hours on my Steam page that I spend trying to play this game.
Yeah, well, that's nothing.
What you're saying is you don't really learn to love the game, but it's a sort of Stockholm Syndrome situation.
It definitely sounds like Stockholm Syndrome, just classic Stockholm. You spent $60 plus however much it was for the expansions to play this game. Otherwise, it'd be a waste. It's some cost fallacy. Just play the game and enjoy it. You have to enjoy it. Otherwise, it's just a waste, right?
It's $1 an hour. It's not bad at all.
Yeah, no, I actually paid whatever the original price was for the original Distant Worlds and then the $30 asking price or $40 asking price for each expansion. So I think I paid like $150.
Yep. You poor soul.
Well, no, and I think it's $150 well spent because I probably spent at least 300-400 hours in that game. So to answer your question, Blocky Monster, 55, I love that name. I had to say it out loud. To answer your question, Blocky Monster 55, it's a great game, and the only person that you shouldn't ask about it is Kirkus because he doesn't know what good is.
Okay. He has no moral compass, and he only spent 60 hours in the game.
60 hours? What from me? Look, it's... See, the reason... Because we mentioned this before, and I give Aurora 4X a total pass on whatever it does, because it's a hobby game. I'm not going to shit on somebody's baby, and that's what hobby games are. But Matrix took a hobby game and then put a $60 price tag on it and they didn't do anything for it. And that's where I have a lot of my problems for it. That the user interface is awful. I don't actually think, as interesting as the economics are, that it's that deep. It's just kind of shallow. All the resources are mostly the same. They're just a giant micromanaging nightmare. So, I can't back it.
I
just can't.
I think you just described every Matrix game.
Yeah, I mean, there's a half their catalog is shovelware, but
yeah. All right. So, with that being said, sir, we like it. Kirkus is not right, and we'll move on to our actual topic. So, like I said in the intro, we're here today to talk about Civilization as a series, and we like to pick big topics like we did last time with just generalizing 4X and what that meant, and hell, that was pretty ridiculous and very difficult, so let's tackle another difficult subject. The Civilization series as a whole, I think we should start with the very first one, because that would make sense chronologically. Someone tell me a little bit about what made Civilization stand out from the very beginning.
There wasn't really any other game quite like it at the time, where you played through all of history on this massive world map, where you started with just your one settler and your one little initial city, and by the end of the game, you have this huge world-spanning empire.
Yeah, I think what Civilization did before that, or Civilization was doing that no one had done before, was, as we talked about with 4X last episode, just, it created this span of time that no one had really done before. So what are the hallmarks of Civilization 1? So we have what was always going to be this journey through time from like Stone Age all the way to modern era. But what else was Civilization 1 doing that kind of stuck with the rest of the series?
Well, they have the first parts of empire building. It's been really fleshed out, especially since Civ 4, but you already had different governments that you could switch to, if I'm not mistaken, and I think I'm not. You started with just your despotism, and then you became a monarchy, and eventually you could choose between different alternative government types. There's more to empire building than just spamming out spearmen and conquering everybody. It's really about your internal politics as well and your economy.
It also did an interesting job in terms of it let you choose a leader and become a leader and choose a civilization to play as. And I think that added a lot to the game as opposed to just making it a more abstract thing. The ability to choose a civilization made it feel more concrete.
Well, we can also bring up, Gandhi was a pretty big, he had his big historical break in Civilization 1 with his, the bug. Is anybody familiar with that? The bug where it became super aggressive, and it was by complete accident. That was in the original Civilization. And then as kind of a joke, they carried that on through the other Civilization games where Gandhi would be like, this peaceful character, but like end game, he was dropping nukes on everybody.
Yeah, the funny part about that one, if in case people weren't aware of it, that Civ game basically tracked the AI's aggressiveness as an unsigned integer. And by end game, you develop democracy, which would decrease everybody's aggressiveness. The problem is that in an unsigned byte, if you subtracted something that would be negative, you basically take 255 minus that number. So he went totally berserk. His aggressiveness went higher than they even programmed for it, so it just went berserk and started nuking everybody.
Yeah, the aggressiveness scale went from 1 to 10, and with democracy, he looped around to 255.
Yeah, and I love how they've kind of used that as like an inside joke throughout the series, and each iteration, there's just like a blood-hungry, bloodthirsty Gandhi, because that would make sense. Gandhi's violent.
Yeah, I mean, for people who don't even know history well, they probably just perceive Gandhi as this really terrible person. And like, what is he doing with Nobel Peace Prizes?
Thanks, Civilization.
Ruining a good man's good name. Not right. So what else has Civilization 1 bring that stayed with the series? I mean, like, we talked a little bit about Gandhi, too. But there was other things like the tech tree and stuff like that. Let's talk a little bit about that, too.
Well, we can say the tech tree hasn't changed all too much. I mean, aside from actually drifting away from the actual formula of doing history with Civilization. Whenever they drift away, they do, you know, like a Beyond Earth. If we look at Alpha Centauri, the tech trees are very much different. But when they do the historical civilizations, it always feels like the tech trees are fairly similar. Now, I haven't played Civ 6, so I'm not entirely sure how different the tech tree is in that. But I know between, you know, Civ 3, Civ 4, Civ 5, how much can you really change? History is history. You can only reinvent the wheel so many times. It's the wheel. It made it very difficult, I think, for them to actually be able to mess with the tech tree and kind of play around with it, aside from when they would drift off into their sci-fi roles. And I know that that's something that's definitely just carried on over and over and over. Does anybody have any comment about Civ 6? Is the tech tree different? I haven't played it.
It is, because there's two. There's a tech tree and the civic tree. You research techs with you research technology with science, as usual. And you research civics with culture, so they run in parallel. So you could be ahead in time, ahead of time in technology, but behind the times in civics, or vice versa. Although that's very unlikely. This is you've got which era you're in. It depends on your highest level, but yeah, you could. If you stack like one of these particular types of yields and neglect the other, then you can be running around with knights and musket men while you're still in a classical era culture wise.
I think something that did always stick with the Civ series is taking your tanks and mowing down barbarian spearmen. I think that's a very important part of Civilization.
That's the best part of Civilization. There's nothing quite like using a flight pattern of bombers to take out a group of spearmen or archers in the late game.
And there's always that frustrating moment where you put your tank up against a spearman and your tank loses, and you just have this real meltdown, like, that's not physically possible.
That's always the worst moment when that happens.
Yeah, and that's
okay. I get that they were fortified, but
right, and that's something that doesn't happen quite as often in the newer iterations. Because I feel like maybe perhaps it was just a balance issue, but the last couple, like especially with Civ 5 and Civ 6, I just don't see. I don't remember a time where I was actually flying around with helicopters and taking on spearmen. It's something that was more prevalent with the earlier iterations. You guys agree?
Yeah, I think there's probably two reasons for that. I think the 5 and 6 made the barbarian scale a little more technologically. The other thing is that there's a lot more rubber banding in terms of the research, because that research cost depended on your civilization size. So if you're steamrolling everybody, everything would cost more, and that'd be kind of a bit of an issue.
In Civ 5, it's actually they're still usually running around with the early game units, because they're hardwired to spawn a certain percentage of their units as warriors, the starting melee unit, and a certain percentage as archers, the starting range unit. So while they can definitely spawn other more advanced units all the way up to the destroyers, and there's even screenshots around a barbarian XCOM squad, the end game, very end game crossover infantry with alien plasma rifles. You're still going to fight. Like, the majority of barbarians that you're going to encounter are still going to be warriors and archers.
That's funny. Actually, I never thought about that until we basically brought it up right now, but it's true. In the later Civ games, I really haven't encountered that situation where there's this huge asymmetry between technologies, and I guess that's probably something they've just been working on constantly. And I don't know if my nose has been as into the development as it should have been, or for people who are really focused on this. But yeah, that's something I'm just realizing now.
And it may be just because too that the AI has, I mean AI technology has developed. So at this point, I just remember, I never remember actually being terribly challenged by earlier Civilization games. So I think that might be a lot to do, or I might have a lot to do with the AI that's at least developing on some level with the later ones. I know that still sucks for the most part, but maybe that has something to do with it.
I definitely think it sucks, but what did you think about Alpha Centauri? I thought the AI was actually pretty challenging in that.
All right, so we can go into Civilization 2, because I think Civilization 2 is a spin-off of Civilization 2, right?
Alpha Centauri is basically 2.5.
Well, sort of. It was released after Civ 2, and it was definitely based on Civ 2, but it had a lot of unique features that really never returned. So it's really more of its own thing, especially when you look at Beyond Earth, which really, especially at release, felt like it is an expansion pack for Civ 5 and some of the other... Alpha Centauri really stands apart. There are features in that game that haven't reappeared in any other Civilization game since.
But to answer your question, Sabouts, yeah, I think that the AI in Alpha Centauri was actually really challenging. And I don't know what the change was. I know Brian Reynolds was actually more involved in Alpha Centauri 2, so maybe he had something to do with it. But yeah, I do remember being challenged. And I remember actually losing a few games in Alpha Centauri, but... Do you guys remember anything about what Civilization 2 brought to the formula that wasn't present in Civilization 1? I know I'm asking you guys to go way back.
Well, I mean, Civilization 2 had a PlayStation 1 port, so there's there was that.
Did it really? I had no idea.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing I actually remember about that. It was actually ported over to the Sony PlayStation at one point. I don't know the date. I just remember seeing Civilization 2 on the PlayStation 1. And it was, I think, pretty much the first and last Civilization game to ever be ported to a console.
Yeah, it came to the PlayStation in 1998.
Well, I remember Civilization 2 a lot. I actually was challenged by the AI even in that, maybe just because I was younger and didn't know how to do things as well as maybe I do now. But I loved Civilization 2. Probably because I didn't play the original, so it was basically like my first exposure to this kind of game. I think the only game I'd played with the land expansion 4X type stuff before this was Lords of Magic, but I was extremely impressed, and I played probably hundreds of hours of Civ 2.
Now, I'm just looking back on the list, do you guys remember expansion packs for Civilization 2? I guess it had expansion packs. I don't remember those.
I think I had the Civ 2 Gold when I finally picked it up, so... That probably implies that there's expansion packs, but I don't remember it now.
Yeah, something that I missed from the earlier Civilization games, and I'm pretty sure it was in Civilization 2, and we mentioned it before the podcast, was the ability to upgrade your palace rooms. And I know I'm not the only one that misses that.
Everyone misses that. And that was only in Civ 1, I think. I think there might have been a version of Civ 2. I can't really remember, but Civ 2 had a throne room.
Yeah, Civ 3 also had... I think you could kind of add things to your palace. And I also definitely remember Alpha Centauri, because I've played more recently. You could, each time you did some kind of accomplishment, you can add something to your monuments.
Yeah, in Alpha Centauri, it was more reactive. Like you couldn't really customize anything. It was just that this achievement appeared on the monuments. It's like an achievement wall, really. That you can't choose what gets added.
You guys have mentioned things that have helped me kind of stir my memory a little bit. So I'll even answer my own question that I brought up earlier about some of the things that sort of carried with Civilization as a series. You guys mentioned barbarians, and that's something that definitely has stuck with the series. And you also mentioned wonders, which I think it's actually one of the most important things, I think, in the Civilization series, because no one else has really done it as well. And it's also just something that's so iconic with the Civilization series that I feel like it really could be one of its hallmark mechanics. So I'll open the floor here just for a minute to talk about them, because I think they are important to talk about. Someone with a bit more experience, I know there's a few of you here that have had a lot of experience with Civilization. Can you tell me about why they work so well?
People tend to build their strategies around certain wonders, because they're definitely huge game changers if you get them. Depending, you know, you have your pyramids that, you know, I think the first one or second one dropped granaries in all your cities, and that'd be huge. So, you know, you have to plan ahead of time. Okay, don't need to build granaries here, but I need to get pyramids or this is all going to go sideways.
Yeah, and I can't think of any other game that does them quite as well. They really do change the gameplay. Like, there are many strategies that, like, I wouldn't say professional Civilization players, but, you know, incorporate, but there are people who play Civilization very well that have various like milestones with wonders. So if they can reach a certain wonder at some point, then they know they're going to go for this other wonder the next time. And, you know, they kind of like, they jump from wonder to wonder through their game. And that's like their strategy. But other than that, can you guys think of anything else? And now that I've mentioned Barbarians, Wonders, we know we've talked about tech trees, anything else that has sort of stuck with the entire Civilization series that even in other offshoots and stuff that Civilization 1 and 2 brought to the table?
Well, there's something that Civilization 2 brought to the table that never returned in the Test of Time sort of expansion, updated re-release something. Not entirely sure what its status is, but it added a whole new different graphic set, which made it look even better. And more importantly, it added several alternative scenarios. Like you could, in addition to just the normal original game, you could play fantasy, sci-fi, and extended original, which was the best part of Test of Time, which, again, is a shit, like with some of the features from Alpha Centauri, is a shame that never reappeared. And like the cast from Civ 1, is a shame that never reappeared, is multiple maps. Because with within these game modes, these scenarios, you had simultaneous play on multiple maps. In sci-fi, you land on this this other, on this extrasolar planet in Lalande 21185, which was at the time one of the few solar systems with extrasolar planets that we knew of, which these days we know are extremely common, but back then were thought to be extremely rare. And as you expand, like at first you're just surviving, but then you you develop spaceflight again, and you go out, and there's a map for orbit with an abandoned alien orbital platform, and then you develop interplanetary space travel, and there are two other planets that you can colonize. There's one which is like a dune-like dust planet, I think, and one which is a gas giant. And each of these four maps, they have their own separate mechanics, their own separate units. And with the fantasy, you had like the surface world, the sky, the sea floor, and the underground. And you know, you have this created a very interesting sort of layer situation where you have your units that can go on the water can't go anywhere else. So you can have a really powerful navy, but that doesn't do anything for you on a planet on the other side of the solar system.
Well, I think Alpha Centauri solved that nicely by letting you build submersible aircraft carriers that you could fill full of attack helicopters. Always been a huge fan of that one.
Yeah, I'm actually glad that you brought up the remake for Civilization 2, the Test of Time, because if you think about it, they've never done that again in the Civilization series. They've never gone back and been like, all right, you know, we're going to remake Civ 4. I mean, essentially, the remake of Civilization 2 came out after Alpha Centauri. So it would almost be like if next year they were like, hey, we just released the Civ 5 remake. It's not something I don't think they would ever do again. That was like the first and only time they really had a serious remake of a game where they went back and took what was essentially they considered a classic game worth upgrading, and they changed things like the UI and whatnot. But nowadays, since we have things, I think, like being able to update games as they go and adding expansions and whatnot, it's a lot more streamlined than it used to be. So making a remake of Civilization 2 back then was a little bit more practical. Making a remake of Civilization 5 now wouldn't be as practical, because at that point you might as well just make Civilization 7.
I actually think the last thing that they remade would be Colonization, with the Civ 4 Colonization remake.
We didn't talk about Civ 4 Colonization.
Well, we can actually talk about the original Sid Meier's Colonization, which came out right after, I think it was actually between Civilization 1 and Civilization 2, if I can remember correctly. And, you know, honestly, that's one of my favorite 4X games of all time. And it's something that we don't really mention much. And did anybody get a lot of time with Colonization?
It is so much fun.
Yeah, they changed the mechanics to a point that it was a drastically different game. It still felt like a Sid Meier's game, but it was so different than any Civilization game, and it was so well balanced. It felt like, if you could go back and attach a name to it, it would be like a roguelite 4X. It was very difficult, and it was a lot of fun. Anybody else have any experience with it?
Well, I'm going to be sorry that I'll be inflicting my accent on you for the majority of this episode, but I played it quite a lot back in the day, but when I didn't really understand a whole lot. And I've been playing it again more recently, and it really is a damn good game. It is really well designed, and it does what it sets out. It achieves everything it sets out to do. It is just really everything just fits together. It's really, really well designed, well made. It's you know, one of the better games overall in the entire Civ series.
Let's jump forward. Has anyone had any experience with Civilization IV colonization?
Yeah, I took a look at it. It's a pretty faithful remake. It's just this. It does feel weird in the Civ IV engine, but it's still mostly what it was trying to do.
Yeah, and you know, it kind of felt, I think, a bit disjointed for some reason. I don't know if it was, I want to say maybe it was the aesthetics, because it felt too much like Civilization IV still. But if you could understanding the gameplay that was still present in Civilization IV colonization, if you took that and made, I mean, if you just simplified it just a wee bit and brought it back to the Civilization I engine, it's basically the same game. They're just seemed a bit like a disjointment in the Civilization IV colonization version. And I don't know why, because I loved colonization from the get-go. I thought it was an amazing game. I mean, here was, you were using citizens, like, we're just now getting around to using citizens again in 4X games, like they were using way back then in colonization. And, you know, you were facing a big bad. You were facing old Europe. It was a very difficult and very challenging game, but it also had a lot of really cool things that we haven't seen again, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I think that some level of disjointedness is because it's basically a very complex Civ 4 mod, whereas the original was obviously a purpose-built game with the interface, you know, baked in.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I think colonization was its own game. It didn't feel like... Well, it couldn't have been. It was between Civilization 1 and Civilization 2, and it certainly was better looking than Civilization 1, so it wasn't based off the Civilization 1. And maybe they'd use some aspects of the engine to make colonization, but you're right, I think Civilization 4 colonization was just a very well-done mod that just fell short a little bit.
Yeah, if anything, it's definitely a testament to how moddable Civ 4 was, which I think it's still the most moddable of any of the Civ games.
Anybody remember anything about Civilization 3?
That was my Civilization. I played so much Civilization 3, I don't even know. I must have hundreds of hours into that game. But it's hard to look back because it's been so long. It's hard to look back and actually remember all of the key features that made Civ 3 stand out. I mean, I know that Doomstacks have been around for a while, but I really feel like Doomstacks hit pretty hard in Civilization 3. I remember just like fighting massive piles of just like different types of enemy. I remember like when I'd go and attack the AI and they'd have like Marines or, infantry on top of their city. And as I'm attacking them, I'd like fight my way down to like spearmen that had been left over, still sitting on the city that were never upgraded anything. There was all sorts of weird things about Civilization 3, but yeah, I played that game a lot.
The other thing I always enjoyed about Civ 3 is that the railways didn't have a movement limit. So basically your railways were just instantaneous teleporters for your entire army.
And that's right.
Pretty broken sometimes.
Yeah, Civ 3 is also the one where, because of the way combat worked, is the most notorious for the issue. Well, I say issue, unintended feature of spearmen being able to kill tanks, which is commemorated in an emoticon on Civ Fanatics with the Civ 3 graphics.
I do remember Civilization 3 being like an infrastructure nightmare. Like looking at a late game Civilization 3 map, I was just put off because it looks so ugly. There was like railroads and like lines and just crap everywhere. It just looked hideous.
I think that was also in Civ 2 though, because I remember I didn't play Civ 3 as much. I just played a lot of Civ 2, and I remember that the railroads everywhere was how you did everything. I don't remember if they had the infinite movement. They're all kind of jumbled up in my head, but yeah, I'm really glad, though, that we talked about the Doomstacks, because that's definitely something I want to bring up later when we talk about Civ 5, because, yeah, that was around basically for forever.
Yeah, the issue with roads and railroads being mandatory everywhere is basically that was in the game from Civ 1 as well, all the way up until Civ 4, and then Civ 5 changed the whole thing around with the upkeep costs for road and railroads, and the infinite movement was also from the first game up until Civ 4. When Civ 5, your units are still really fast, but they're not. It is not complete teleportation.
Yeah, Civ 4, they were just fast. They weren't teleporters.
Yeah, I think as Civ 4, they were. I'm not 100% sure, but I think they were. I want to say they were still this teleportation. It's a really interesting thing that now that we've reached Civ 4, that you see a really definite development from Civ 1 to Civ 2, Civ 3, Civ 4. Like, they're building more features onto the same core, but like the core mechanics remain basically, not unchanged, but very similar from game to game. And Civ 4, really, a lot of what happens in Civ 4, the functionality goes all the way back to Civ 1. And then in Civ 5, it completely changes everything. This is something that I read about in one article. Was actually a deliberate design decision that they just basically just hit the reset button and designed the game again from the ground up. There's really a sort of there's sort of watershed between like Civ 1 to 4, and then Civ 5 and 6. They really stand apart from the first four.
Yeah, I just quickly checked. In Civ 4 railroads, your basic roads double your movement points. With engineering roads, triple them, and railroads, that's a times 10 on it.
Yeah, and speaking to Strat's point, I think you could probably look back from Civilization 1 to Civilization 4 and look at it as an iterative process. And I personally feel Civilization 4 was the pinnacle of that iterative process. They built on what they had developed from Civilization 1, and then built some more Civilization 2 and kind of almost perfected that formula with Civilization 4. Am I the only one that thinks Civilization 4 was the best so far?
I'm 100% with you. I definitely think Civ 4 was, if you were to graph it out, I think it would come out with Civ 4 being at the top, and then it kind of, you know, Civ 5 was pretty good, but I don't think it hit Civ 4 status, and then Civ 6, I haven't played it, but from what I've heard, it falls a little bit short of Civ 5, although I've heard a lot of mixed opinions too.
Yeah, Civ 4 is definitely my favorite. Civ 5, after it's been patched and a few expansions have come out, at the end of it all was pretty decent, but the release Civ 5 was just, the balance was way too out of whack for it to be great.
So I thought that the question, I may have misinterpreted it, of Civ 1 to 4, I would consider Civ 4 the best. That's how I interpreted Rob's question. But I personally think that Civ 5 was better. But I don't know if I might be jumping the gun. Are we discussing Civ 5 now? Is it fair game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think at this point we can just sort of talk about all of them. We've gotten a good foundation going. So yeah, tell me a little bit why you think Civilization 5 is better. Because honestly, when I first started playing Civilization 5, I just went right back to 4.
Well, yeah. This is why I think that Civilization 5 was the best, because I didn't start playing it having owned Civilization 4 and like all of its expansions. I didn't start playing it until like the gold package or whatever, the complete package on Steam went on sale. So by that point, I think it was already a hugely different game.
Yeah, Civ 5 on release had just massive, massive balance issues that it was just really it was really problematic. The global happiness was a total mess. The one unit per tile stuff was still pretty rough. The carpets of doom, I think, are worse than stacks of doom, but that's, you know, how often they happen depends a lot on player skills and the specific settings of the map, but there's a lot of issues with it.
So we talked a little bit about this already, this Carpet of Doom. I never, ever saw the Carpet of Doom issue. Now, I don't play multiplayer, and if I do, it's only with friends. It's not, like, competitive. But when I play against the AI and in my experiences on, like, just friend-to-friend multiplayer, I've never experienced this Carpet of Doom issue. And I know that in Civ 1 to 4, the Doom stack was something people always talked about, how silly it is that you move your entire, you know, 40 unit army in one little cluster. Everyone moves one square at a time, and it was really silly. But you're saying that actually you think the carpet situation was somehow worse than that.
Yeah, I actually do. And the reason, because people who complain about the unified Doom stacks, I've never seen that one happen. Just because catapults are such a hard counter to that. Because of the collateral damage, you'd receive so much damage if you clumped up all your units too much. So you just pretty strongly penalized if you tried to take that strategy. Whereas Carpets of Doom just become this carpet clicking nightmare traffic jam, with especially with all the different movement values for all the units. You have to figure out, you know, which one of your 20 units you have out in the field, which one you have to move first to avoid jamming up some other unit. It was just made it unpleasant. And then if you add multiplayer on top of that, I was playing multiplayer with a friend of mine, and she was attacking another AI player with me, but we had to coordinate each of her units one at a time so we wouldn't get in each other's way. And it's just awful.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you. I think that and I see what you're saying with that problem. And that was the most frustrating thing, is even though I thought Doom stacks could have been better done, the Doom carpet or whatever, that was just complete. It ended up taking what was essentially a strategy game, and even though I do think it still is a strategy game, but it turned it into unit moving was more of like a chess match. You know, you can't have units on top of each other. They all move, you know, certain speeds and whatnot, which is fine. But I just feel like there was a better way to do that. Maybe something in the middle, instead of just being like, oh, you know, Doomstacks is a problem, so we're just going to completely eradicate the whole idea of it, and now nobody can be on top of anybody.
So, Zabouts, which one do you prefer between the two then, stacks or the carpet?
Oh, boy. Honestly, Oh, that's a really tough question. That's like trying to pick your favorite child. No, I know that's tough because
your least favorite child, maybe.
Yeah, your least favorite. I mean, I didn't like the stacks to the extent of, like, you know, Kirk has said there was a counter to that with the catapults. But if you did get into a really nasty stack, I mean, sometimes you just be fighting off. There'd be this one tile. I remember, like, I'd move like a small army to this one unit, and I didn't bother to right click and see how many were actually there. And I'd kind of get up to them and get ready to engage in combat, and I just do a quick right click and see, and I'd be like, oh, you know, there's 45 units on this tile. And you just wouldn't, there's really no way to know unless you went around and checked every tile. So Doomstacks, I think, had its issues with that, but I also didn't like how Civ 5 kind of did turn it into some sort of, you know, intergalactic chess match where you're trying to make sure that you don't pinch off your catapult or you don't close off a spearman from being able to move up and make a combat move. And it just seems kind of silly that way, where you can't actually maneuver your units in the best strategic way possible without having to actually cut them off. So it's very, very difficult to pick which one. I think the Doomstacks, honestly, I think the Doomstacks was a better way, only if there was a way to maybe make it so you didn't end up with 45 different units all the way from Marine down to Spearman on the same exact tile.
Yeah, and I think Doomstacks are definitely a problem. Like, that's, you'll certainly get no argument from me. I just think there's a better solution than one unit per tile. I think a lot of that just could easily come down to supply limits or, you know, zones of control to not have to, you know, build an actual wall of units. You could just have something like that to keep people from just stacking too many things on the same tile. And there's a lot of games that do. There's a lot of mechanics to get around that. And I don't, because the one unit per tile really gets in the way of even sensible combat, right? Like, you can't, in one unit per tile is supposed to be like Panzer General, right? But Panzer General, the map is so much bigger to maneuver around, but you don't have that space to maneuver. It just becomes a traffic jam on a strategic map.
Right. I think that Doom carpets are a bigger issue than Doom stacks, but real actual, you know, the notorious carpets where every single available land square is covered with units, that doesn't really come up a lot. At least not as often as reputation would indicate. I haven't personally encountered Doom carpets at all. While in Civ 4, I have encountered Doom stacks in basically every major war with the AI.
So I think that I would love to see Endless Legends solution to this implemented in a Civilization game, because I think it would be awesome to see, like, basically just composing armies, and then those armies spread out almost like the like Endless Legend does. So if you get into a fight where, you know, or if you just you have two armies that clash in Civilization, they like fan out onto the Civilization map very much like Endless Legend does. I would love to see that, because I feel like that's a perfect solution to this whole like Doom stack and all that other stuff. If you just have an army that's controlled by, you know, the ability to command a certain number of troops, and then, you know, having those armies fan out once you actually combine or get into a battle together, it's a really elegant solution. I'd love to see Civilization do it.
Well, I think that it is a very interesting solution, and it worked well on Endless Legend, where it's, you know, thematically appropriate. But I think that in Civilization, it would feel more out of place with in a fantasy context. You know, you can sort of take these things more in stride, but in Civilization, you'd be basically it would feel strange, because you do have that veneer of historicity and verisimilitude. And that would really that sort of shatter that illusion. I do think that something like I do think Doomstack should be split up, and like we've brought up some the supply limits per tile would go a long way. You can stack a lot more units on like open grassland than you can in thick jungle or something. So you can still, you do still have the tactical gameplay, but you can still stack units. There's not to the insane degree that's Civ 1 to 4 lets you do.
Oh, I really agree with that, actually, with the supply limits. I think that's a fantastic idea. There's a lot of games that do that out there. And what's really cool about the supply limits is it actually allows more in-depth mechanics and interesting quirks and things for the game that the developers can add in. Because you could do things like upgrade certain tiles so they have higher supply limits. If you wanted to put more troops on it, you could potentially build certain units like supply carts that might increase an army's supply limit so that you could have more units on there. There might be certain researches that increase a tile supply limit. There's a lot of things you could do with supply limit. I'm surprised actually Civilization hasn't even bothered to test any of that kind of stuff with it, especially because of how many games do use a sort of supply limit mechanic.
And to that end, I think honestly, if you could build infrastructure items or, you know, battlefield items along your Civilization that you know, like if you built a catapult that was like a stationary catapult that, you know, when you had two armies that went head to head and they fanned out like they do in Endless Legend, you know, having that catapult come in, and I just think that's a great idea. Like if you could combine what we're talking about, maybe with supply lines and having various terrain changing supply line capabilities, and then also, I personally think that if you had armies composed of, you know, multiple units that were limited by those supply lines and command point limitations, and then, you know, we just brought all those ideas together, you could almost fix the Stack of Doom or Carpet Doom stuff.
Yeah, I think supply limits is a really good way of going about it. Most games of Civilization actually do have some kind of, at least on some level, supply mechanic, but most of it is applied on a global level to your income. So like any units over your supply limit would just cost you more gold, which doesn't do anything for your stacking problem. What's funny about this is that Paradox, with their actual supply limits in terms of territories and the forts and the tactical movements that go around with that, actually does solve the problem pretty well of the Doom stack. And to further the irony, another Paradox game, Stellaris, right now, because I'm playing it so much, also has the worst Doom stack problem I've ever seen in a game. So they're going to have to deal with that one at some point. But yeah, supply limits, logistical limits, leader limits, command point limits, you know, that's all. There's a lot of solutions to these problems that other games have looked at. And it's really unfortunate Civilization hasn't really taken those to task yet, especially since your one unit per tile system is pretty rough.
Yeah, I'm still awake. Don't you think, though, changing the combat in Civilization would slow the game down immensely? I think a lot of people enjoy having that just fast click, click, click combat rather than the Endless Legend style.
Yeah, and I think that's also another reason why I'm more okay with the Doomstack problem than I am with the Carpet of Doom problem. Just because, fine, it's not, you know, a huge tactical play, and you can just, like other games, have auto-resolve and stuff like that. You just smash your stacks together until something falls over, and everything is fine. And it results as at least quickly, if not satisfactorily, whereas Carpets of Doom, you end up having this click fast of back and forth of trying to take around units, and, you know, if you're trying to take a city that has mountains on three sides, and you're going to be there for a dozen turns just clicking your spearmen at it until, you know, you fall over, and it's just, it gets pretty rough.
There's no doubt to me that this is part of the conversation we spent the most time on, and I think definitely is an indication of how polarizing the various combat models have been. So let's get into Civilization 5 too, because I feel like we talked about Civilization 1 and through 4 being just, you know, new iterations of that same formula, Civilization 5 tried to change things quite drastically. So not only did they say the whole like one unit per tile, but they went to hexes and a bunch of other stuff. Was it you, Tortuga, that said you started off with 5?
No, I had Civ 2 and on, but didn't Civ 4 have hexes, though? That was squares as well. I'm being informed now with the mic in my ear. Yeah, so Civ 5 changed that, but no, it wasn't me who started there. I just started in Civ 5 after all the expansions had been released, because in my opinion, there's no reason to jump to the next game, which was, I mean, if the previous one was still working well.
I went from Civ 1 on the Atari ST, which I'm not sure you guys know what that is, to Civ 5. I'd never actually played Civ. I think I might have played Civ 3 a little bit, but I never played Civ 4, so I was pretty much a Civ 5 guy, really.
Did you play Civ 5 with all the expansions, or did you jump right in?
I jumped right in. I actually played it more earlier on than after expansions, just because a lot of friends were playing multiplayer, even with the crashes.
And did you feel like you were as involved and invested in Civ 5 after coming? I mean, like, did it really grab you like the other Civilization did?
Well, I can't actually remember much of Civ 1. It was so long ago. But yeah, I did enjoy my time with Civ 5. I agree with the Carpet of Doom problem, where you had units that moved at different speeds and you really had to plan out how you're going to move stuff in when you were attacking a city, which was very annoying.
I always wondered if my ability to play Civilization 5 was like completely just tarred by Civilization 4's awesomeness, because I put 12 hours into Civilization 5 up until the last like Brave New World expansion, and then I put like another 60 hours in, and I never really got into it. I think I'm actually just not really into Civilization anymore. That sucks.
Well, one of the main guys I used to play multiplayer with in Civ 5 currently has over 5,000 hours in Civ 5. I was just looking at his Steam profile. So yeah, a lot of my friends went to Civ 5, so.
Well, we kind of started talking about it. What about this hexes versus squares? Is anybody disappointed by the change to hexes? Because as like a traditional war gamer, I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah, actually, I think if we're talking about changes we liked about Civ 5, I'm totally okay with hexes. Hexes generally just make more sense from a strategic perspective than squares do. The aesthetics are also better. Like it's a good looking game that I, you know, the way the hexes mess with each other on the world map just looks pretty appealing.
Right. As someone who never played a lot of the other Civs, what's the biggest difference in between the hexes and the squares? How did that change the game?
I think that the game was always meant to be played with hexes. I'm pretty sure that Civilization is based on board game stuff, which was originally hex game stuff. And you can even see in the Civ 1 through 4 that the squares you have around your city are like this many in this direction, and but not that many in this direction, because they're trying to mimic the hex formation already. So I think that it was just something that was waiting to happen, and maybe Civ didn't want to discourage people from playing by having the hex game type thing, but I'm really happy with it.
Well, one of the issues with games that use squares for movement as opposed to hexes is with hexes, if you get from point A to point B, you know, the shortest route is always a straight line. But in squares, if movement costs to if diagonal movement costs are the same as horizontal movement costs, then you get a weird situation where because the difference between diagonal squares is in a way longer than horizontal squares. So you could go in a straight line from point A to point B, but you could also just zigzag the whole way, and you'd get there in exactly the same amount of time, but you'd cover a whole lot more territory, especially, which is especially handy when exploring. So that's just an issue, like I said, an issue that's common to any square-based game.
Yeah, if that's the case, and that because the unit costs movement cost was between diagonal and horizontal squares were the same. Yeah, that's the problem with the geometry of the squares. The geometry of hexes, of course, is that the center of any hex is the same distance to any other adjacent hex. Right, it's always the same unit distance, and you know, it's easier to emulate like circular things as well. So it's a lot of advantages there. Although actually the original Civilization board game actually was a territory map. So more like a risk thing than a hex thing.
Right. So Civilization 5 changed a lot. And, you know, the two expansions, I think a lot of people with the two expansions can say that Civilization 5 ranks among the best Civilization games. Personally, I would say it's Civ 4 and then Civ 5 right below that. And I see Civ 6 having the potential of maybe splitting those two or being right behind Civilization 5. Let's talk a little bit about Civilization 6's change to the formula. So it's kind of funny that 1 through 4, now that we're talking about this, it's sort of coming to me, but 1 through 4 were like, you know, slight iterations of each other, kind of perfecting the formula. Then 5 like came in and like ripped the guts out and like changed things a lot. And, you know, it became its own thing, its own. It's very different from Civilization 3 or 2 or 5 or sorry, yeah, Civilization 5 is different than 5, but Civilization 4 is different than Civilization 5. But you can even go, you know, like with Civilization 6 now, which doesn't really even feel like an iteration of Civilization 5. It kind of tore the guts out and started changing things too. Let's talk about some of the bigger changes of Civilization 6.
Well, I mean, you definitely can't also forget the the Civ 5 space reskin that everybody wants to pretend never happened.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. So we can talk briefly about that garbage beyond Earth. In what we were talking about, Civilization 4 colonization being a mod, basically, of Civilization 4, we can talk about Beyond Earth being a civilization, a mod of Civilization 5. I mean, obviously, it was a studio-funded, well-done mod, but it still felt very much like Civilization 5. Yeah, basically a skinning of, like a space skinning of Civilization 5. Just briefly, can someone tell me about why Beyond Earth failed so badly and how it's trash and garbage?
I mean, honestly, I don't want to say, I think a lot of people did expect to go into it, even though the developers said over and over that it's not Alpha Centauri and that it wasn't going to take inspiration from Alpha Centauri. I mean, it's very obvious that it did take some inspiration, but I still don't think that it didn't change the community's opinion on when everybody went into the game. That's what they wanted. They wanted a modern day updated Alpha Centauri, and that's not really what anybody got. But then on top of the fact that it really, as somebody who did pre-order the game, it was really the first and last game I ever pre-ordered. It was, when I jumped into it, I think I played it for maybe 3 hours and I was just like, it really just feels like I'm playing Civilization 5 again. I mean, yeah, there's different units, there's different tech tree, things are different, but it just the look and feel of it was so much just like, it was like they used the same pretty much everything, just reskin stuff. They kind of altered the UI a little bit, changed the tech tree up. But other than that, there wasn't really anything else there. And then on top of that, a big thing that actually really turned me off was the nations for the game, because whereas you're playing the original Civilizations and every single nation feels somewhat unique, different to an extent, you really feel like you're playing that nation and you really get into it. Every single, unlike Alpha Centauri, which I think did it amazingly with all the different various nations, Beyond Earth definitely fell short. Every nation kind of felt the same with slight altercations to them, and there wasn't really a whole lot there.
Well, the thing with the different civs is one of the aspects that they wanted to put in Beyond Earth was that you'd be developing your civilization, your country, your sponsor while the game went on with the affinity system, and you'd really be sort of defining what you were while you're playing, which is an interesting concept, but didn't really in practice. It like I said, it made for leaders and sponsors that were just much less interesting and compelling, and had much less character than the countries from Civ 5.
Yeah, not only less character than countries from Civ 5, but if people really were wanting an Alpha Centauri remake, reboot, or whatnot, and they didn't get it because those factions in the end were just super bland compared to the incredibly well characterized factions of the original Alpha Centauri. So they just kind of made a game that I'm not sure anybody really wanted. So that would definitely explain a lot of the commercial flop that it was.
If I can interject real quick about a game that isn't Civ, there is a game like with Alpha Centauri. You also have really, really high quality writing, and that really helped made the game come together. There's another game, Pandora First Contact, which is explicitly a spiritual successor to Alpha Centauri, which takes a lot of elements from Alpha Centauri, but they copied a lot of the factions, but they didn't really bring across what made the faction so compelling. So that really illustrates just how important the quality of writing was for Alpha Centauri. I mean, it's still an interesting game and worth checking out, but it really shows that Alpha Centauri's character was not just in mechanical design, but also just in the sheer the quality of writing and the quality of backstory.
I also think that, well, I didn't know that the developer specifically tried to avoid the comparison, as Sabat said, between Alpha Centauri and Beyond Earth. But if they even said that, they must have known what their audience wanted, because we all wanted a new Alpha Centauri. And then they kind of made these similarities between it too. And I mean, just give the people what they want. You know that people want new Alpha Centauri. Just do it. And then, you know, I think they just tried to avoid the overhyping it. But a disaster. Part of the reason why I don't think the nations were as fleshed out is just because by Civ 5, you already have four iterations of the nations. So I don't really fault them there. But if they were just going to do a successor to Alpha Centauri, they would have already had great groundwork for nations to play with. So again, I'm surprised they didn't just make it Alpha Centauri 2.0.
Well, I think one of the contributing factors is that the people behind the game, like the lead designers, this was the first major game they were making. So they were trying to be, you know, they're trying not to be too ambitious. And in the end, that I think that really came back to bite them in the ass, because they had a lot of good ideas, and Beyond Earth did have a lot of potential. Like even at release, like I said, at the end of episode 2 is one of my biggest disappointments. But I did see, you know, a whole lot of potential that could have been brought out. And with Rising Tide, with the expansion, it comes a lot more, you know, it's a lot more visible, and the new sponsors feel like they have more character than the existing one. So they could have done it, And I think that if Rising Tide, you know, the state of the game as it is now, if this was what we got at release, then Beyond Earth wouldn't have been a disappointment, and people it would have still attracted criticism, but it wouldn't have been the massive bomb and disappointment and failure that it was right now, which is really sad, because it deserved more than what it got.
So, I mean, to be clear, Beyond Earth actually wasn't a commercial failure, surprisingly, because I think so many of us just assumed it would be good. I remember, because it came out the same year that Endless Legend came out, and it actually did much better than Endless Legend did at first. So let's move into Civilization VI, which I think we'll probably talk a little bit about now, but I also believe that it might warrant its own entire episode once some of us have gotten the chance to actually play it, because I only think a few of us have played it, and I don't really have much to say about it because I've only played it for about 10 hours. Is anyone a big fan of Six?
I like it a lot.
Okay.
It's got some, you know, it feels like, you know, like we're in another cycle of iterations, and I'm kind of trying to keep this one shorter than the other times we've been talking. Like we established Civ 1, Civ 4 were iterative, and then Civ 5 mashed the reset button, and Civ 6 really feels like, you know, it is sort of rebuilding some elements with the whole district system, the unstacking the cities, but it also feels like they're trying to sort of reintroduce some older mechanics and bring back some of the feel of the older game. So they're really it's not like Civ 5 where they redesigned everything from the ground up, but they are iterating again.
So I think what we'll do is we'll postpone 6, and our group here is going to do some homework. And about a month from now, we're all going to come back and talk about Civilization VI at length. Because I do think there are good things that Civilization VI is doing. And, but I also think there are some pitfalls that the Civilization series has fallen into that Civilization VI didn't bother getting themselves out of. So, would you guys all be willing to maybe take a month or two and play, and we can reconvene and just really dive into Civilization VI?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be down for it.
We're all in luck because there's a demo out, apparently, that we can all at least take a look at.
Right, yeah. You could play the first 60 turns for free, and I don't think there's any limit on who you play or how many times you play those 60 turns. Obviously, that's not going to give you a full idea of how the game plays, but it might be enough. But let's do that. Let's reconvene on Civilization VI, because I think we've done a pretty good job of talking about 1 through 5. Does anybody else have anything that they want to add about the series before we go into a break and meet again in a month or two?
I guess we could briefly mention the kind of off-brand or clones of Civilization.
Right, so you have like a Call to Power and a Call to Power 2 by Activision, where I think there was a brief period where Sid Meier's or Microprose or whatever lost the rights to Civilization, and that's why Activision was able to gobble it up and then release two games that kind of sucked.
Yeah, it's actually a bit weird. They actually was two Call to Power games, and the second one couldn't have Civilization in the title because they just lost the rights to it. So it's just kind of some kind of strange legal battle that Strat might tell us more about. But they're kind of bizarre little games. I'm not sure they were terrible, but they were decidedly the store brand version of Civilization. But I think I made this comparison earlier, but they're kind of the Call to Power is to Civilization as Saints Row is to Grand Theft Auto. They're just kind of took the premise up to 11 with some level of absurdity and just kind of went with it.
Yeah, they had some. I haven't played. I played Call to Power a little bit just to see what the differences are. Not. I didn't really get that far into it, but I've read up on it a little bit. They did have some interesting ideas that would have been cool to see in some of the Civ games. But the thing is, Civilization was based on a board game that was also called Civilization. And what Activision did with the first Call to Power is they released Civilization Call to Power, and when the inevitable lawsuit came, they claimed that the Civilization part referred to the board game. So they were not infringing on Civilization's trademark because they were making a game based on the board game, which was, you know, patently untrue, but Activision is going to Activision. And they lost that court case, and so since I believe that since then they actually haven't been allowed to sell Call to Power 1, I think, which is why Call to Power 2 is lost the Civilization name and is still available in I think on GOG and other places, but Call to Power 1, I believe, is only you can pirate it, of course, because you can pirate everything, but I think it's no longer an option to buy it legally.
So, what about Sid Meier's Starships? We haven't spoken about that.
Oh, no. Come on, man.
Sorry, I had to do that. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, we even specifically said we weren't going to mention that before this podcast starts. Thanks, Drexy. Appreciate that.
No problem.
Why does that game even exist?
I don't know. It's awful. Sid Meier's has definitely lost his... Sid Meier? I guess it's Sid Meier. Yeah, Sid Meier has lost his... special little powers, I think.
It's just a brand at this point. The actual level of him being involved is pretty unknown.
Well, he was actually directly involved in that one. So he was directly involved in that and Ace Patrol and Ace Patrol 2. So he actually talked about it at length about how he had actually gotten back into coding and stuff like that, and that this wasn't just a name attached to a game. It was him actually creating and, you know, seeing this one through. So as much as I'd like to blame it on the marketing, it's definitely him.
Ace Patrol is not half bad, actually, but yeah, Starships, I don't know. Yeah,
there was an article on Rock Paper Shotgun a couple of years ago about why Sid Meier's name is on his games that I only know about because it's still the most recent news update on the Steam interface for, I think, Civ 4. And it said that Sid Meier was heavily involved with the original Civilization, but after that there were other people taking the reins. But he still put Sid Meier's for each of the titles as a trademark. And there's more. Like the article goes into greater detail, so you best read that. But yeah, it really is. It's Sid Meier's Civilization 4, Sid Meier's Civilization 5, Sid Meier's Civilization 6, but Sid Meier himself wasn't heavily involved in the actual production. It really is kind of just a brand.
Yeah, I think, Rob, you'd actually know more about this. Wasn't Civilization 3 the first Civilization that Sid Meier's wasn't involved in designing?
I know he was in 2 and Alpha Centauri because he and Brian Reynolds... Actually, Brian Reynolds had more involvement in Alpha Centauri than anybody else, really. And I think Civilization 3 is where he started to actually step back and allow... I mean, he had less of a role in 2 and then almost no role in 3 or 4, from what I understand.
Yeah, I want to say 3 was Jeff Briggs, if that sounds correctly.
I think Soren Johnson came in Civ 3, wasn't it, I think?
No, Soren Johnson was 4, and that's why I will always love Soren Johnson, because it was such an amazing game, and he still continues to make great games. According to the Wikipedia page, Jeff Briggs was the producer of Civ 2, and a designer was Brian Reynolds, and Sid Meier's name's not even in those credits, so it could be that he stepped away at like the 2-ish, which is funny, because he makes one game, and he's like, hell yeah, my name is awesome, I'm going to put my name on all of this shit, and then he just like for the rest of time...
He's now plastering his name on every game they make. Then so I'm going to come back and make Starships, and it's going to suck.
Yeah, I was going to say, it kind of strikes me as like a new George Lucas, you know, who made Episode 1, and, you know, people are just like, please, God, stop.
Oh, my God. I hope he doesn't listen to this. And he's like, damn those 4Xers thinking I'm George Lucas. That's probably the worst thing we could have said about him.
Well, I mean, come on, Sid Meier's Starships. Have you played it? I mean...
Well, to be fair,
did he play it? I don't know.
To be fair, I think the comment about Ace Patrol actually being good is legit. Ace Patrol for my iPad was a really fun game. So I don't know where that like creativity and spark just died out in Starships, but I just hope that he had like an idea of a game that was going to be awesome, and then he just had to kind of stop.
Yeah, there's at least one thing you can say about Starships. It's not Spore.
Very true.
It's fortunately nothing really is anymore. One thing I might, my one theory about Starships is because they definitely just take the Beyond Earth aesthetic. So they may have just pointed a gun to Sid Meier's head and like, we need a follow-up game right now and just make it. And he just had to make this game, and that's why it's garbage.
That's a good point.
Yeah, okay, all right. Well, let's deal with that. Thanks for joining us, guys. No, that's awesome. You know, there's a few things that we're kind of missing out here. I think the biggest thing that we can all agree on that we missed out was the opportunity to talk about the mods. And I think we could go into an entire episode about 4X modding in general. And we Civilization 4 would be like a PhD thesis point. So let's talk about that another day. Let's actually do like an entire episode of mods. We'll do another entire episode of Civilization 6 since it's recent and there's a lot to talk about it. And we'll do our homework. We'll come back in a couple months as far as Civilization 6 goes. Let's end this episode with some parting thoughts. Drexy, with your beautiful British accent, tell me a little bit about your final thoughts on Civilization from 1 to 5.
Civilization is an okay game, in my book.
Okay, you know what? That needs to be the end of this. No one else gets to say anything about it.
Yep, that's the definitive answer.
You know what? That's going to be the title. Civilization's an okay game. All right, cool. Kirkus, please tell me about your final thoughts here, sir.
Oh, boys. I guess I'd have to say Civ 4 is pinnacle for me, and anybody who says otherwise is just wrong.
Sabalts, you have a lot to follow up on. What you got, sir?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, Kirkus is right. Civ 4, I think, for me, is definitely the pinnacle of the whole genre. Then it probably goes Civ 5, and then Civ 3 was a lot of fun. I haven't played Civ 6, so I can't say anything about it just yet. But, I mean, you know, Civilization is definitely one of those iconic 4X games. It's something everybody knows exists, even if you've never played it, Drexy. Everybody knows that game exists. Everybody knows what it is. So it's definitely iconic for the 4X genre.
Strat, you Dutch bastard, tell me.
There was a lot more that I wanted to say about Civ 5, but I've already been hogging the mic for long enough. But yeah, it's I love Civ. I've been playing Civ basically my entire life, and I really love the whole series.
So we're going to start a new podcast series with Strategia being the only guy that talks the entire time, and he's just going to wax poetic about Civilization. I totally respect your love for the series. I'm glad somebody here really loves it because I'll stop before I let Tortuga tell me a little bit about your parting thoughts, sir.
Well, you guys kind of stole my thunder in those last 10 seconds here. I was going to say that probably we're all a little bit hard on all the Civilization games because they've been around so long. They're so iconic. You know, they're the top dog and everyone likes to take shots at the top dog. But if you didn't have Civ 1 through 4 or 1 through 5 and you just plopped Civ 6 on my desk one day and told me, hey, there's this new game and I was to play it, I would be amazed. So we should give a lot of credit to the whole series, and I don't think anybody listening to this podcast has never played it. But if for some reason you've just like come from some trip from Mars or something and you have never heard of Civilization, then of course you should definitely check it out.
Yeah, I like that point. I feel like you should have been the one to close us out here because I'm going to come back to shitting on it. So, you know, I will say that I grew up on Civilization, so Civilization 4 will always hold like a dear place in my heart. Since then, I think with the resurgence of 4X games, that it's lost its luster for me. And I think it's because Civilization has a formula that it sticks to, and it hasn't really diverged from that formula too much. And we're seeing other games that take that formula and are just like completely altering it and making it more fun in some ways. So like games like Endless Legend, games like even Beyond Earth Rising Tide where there were things that were tried that change up the formula that are really fun. Fallen Enchantress. I mean, there's a lot of games out there right now that are just really, really changing things up and making the game genre better. And I feel like Civilization's kind of stuck in its own formula. So, yeah, sure. It's an okay series. It's just not as good as it used to be, I think. And I think that has a lot to do with its competition.
Yeah, I think I can agree with that. But to Tortuga's point, I think a lot of games owe a lot of design debt to Civilization for what it trailblazed.
Back in my day, we used to walk uphill both ways and play Civ 1, and you new folk with your Civ 6. So I feel like it's kind of evolved too as well, you know. it's been around for so long. People can't help but take shots at it.
No doubt. And I respect its lineage. I really do. It's like, it really is the old man. It is
like my 80-year-old grandpa that doesn't change his ways whatsoever, despite the fact that everything's evolving and changing. And you have to respect that like stubbornness to some degree, but at some level, 80-year-old grandpa needs to start to realize that times are changing.
Well, we can all be happy that Master Ryan stopped at Master Ryan 2 and didn't continue. So it will always be held a special place in everyone's heart.
Can we have Drexion every episode?
He's such a shitster, man. Like, we weren't even talking about Master Ryan. Why you gotta go there, man?
Oh, no.
A lot of us have painful memories.
Yeah, no doubt. So I think that's a pretty good summarization. There's so much we could talk about with Civilization. You know, we could probably spend another 17 hours on podcasts. I know Strat could. So what we'll do is wrap it up there, unless anybody has anything else to talk about.
I might bring something up quickly just because it's something that happened on the subreddit earlier. Somebody was asking about Android games, Android 4X games. And I plugged Battle of Polytopia because it's basically Civ on steroids, super fast and super light. It plays really well on mobile. So I people keep asking that question, and I think a lot of people noticed. So if people want to, you know, have an Android phone or iOS as well, should take a look at it.
It's been a great discussion, guys. I appreciate you all joining me. I think that this was at least an attempt at summarizing what happened with Civilization, but like I said before, we could go on forever. So with the next episode, we'll let you know what the topic will be. And until then, thanks for joining us, guys. Sorry this one ran a little later than it would, but we had lots to talk about. So, and we'll get into Civilization 6 here in a couple months once we get our homework done. And until then, thanks for listening, and we will talk to you guys next time. Bye-bye.